Welcome to the Braithwaite Hall for the second annual general meeting of the Save the David Lean Cinema Campaign Community Interest Company. I sincerely hope you can hear me quite clearly because our sound expert Roger at the back there has introduced unprecedented numbers of speakers to try and overcome the severe acoustic limitations of the Braithwaite Hall. And so are you hearing me quite clearly, which is... Well, that's excellent news. Fine. I think the first thing I should say is apologies that our brochure, despite having the right date, did have a reference to Tuesday, which hopefully not many people spotted. I didn't see anyone wandering around on Tuesday who wasn't here for our film, so I think that turned out okay. But if it did cause a little bit of confusion, apologies for that. I'd just like to introduce who's at the front here. On my left, it's John Ingman, our secretary. On my right, Philip Howard, our vice chairman and programmer. And further along is Margaret Sudak, our treasurer. As for the evening's format, I think you broadly know what's going to happen. You've got it on your agenda. But I will just add, because we're always keen to maximize our sales, that the box office will be open during the interval, and by then we may have possibly said one or two things to motivate some enthusiastic ticket buying. Right, I think I should now hand over to John for the apologies.
We have two apologies for absence from Anne Middleton and one other. I'll put it in me. And Alex Tyler. Thank you.
I hope you can hear me from over here equally well. It sounds a bit better from my point of view, but that might be the monitors. Well, I've moved over to here because I'm due to deliver the annual report, and the lighting is a bit better. The report in question covers the year ending on the 31st of March 2016. So that broadly equates to our second year of operations because we only actually showed one film in 2014 before the year preceding the current year commenced. So that's the period we're focusing on. However, at the end of the report, I will also add two or three things that are particularly important developments since the beginning of April because it would be a shame to not make some reference to those. I would like to acknowledge that this report contains considerable input from my programming, box office, volunteer coordination, and technical colleagues. So I'm grateful for the substantial contributions they made. I'm going to start with film programming because that's obviously an extremely important and high-profile part of what we do. We've researched forthcoming film releases in many ways, as well as the usual methods of scanning reviews and trailers and attending distributors' previews, including a special Film London Day for independent cinemas, we made the most of the London Film Festival by systematically grading the entire programme and sending reviewers to 43 different films. This helped us to book a very diverse range of exciting films over the last year, with the biggest successes including Our Little Sister, The Witch, Taxi Tehran, Janice Little Girl Blue, Grandma, and last month's Anne, Sweet Bean, as well as ensuring we gave a bigger push to some films we might have booked anyway, such as Brooklyn, Deepan, and When Marnie Was There. This month's The Wave is another 2015 festival hit, and there are still more to come as intriguing independent films find their way onto the market. We're now repeating the process for the 2016 festival next month. They went on sale to members at 10 o'clock today, so clearly Philip was poised at the right time. The process of getting from a list of films to a printed program every month is complex, and we'd like to thank Nick Dowling, who helps prepare the brochures, and Jesse Ajay, who has written many of the synopses in recent months. Not all of our films have attracted a large audience, perhaps because the subject matter or style sounds unappealing. But the programming process doesn't just involve finding films we want to show, but also identifying films that don't work. We have sat through some films with strong critical notices that proved uninteresting, including one of the foreign language Oscar nominees. So basically, we suffered so that you don't have to. So, when we do offer something unusual, it's been through this filtering process, and we've chosen it because, even if it's a little challenging, we're sure it's a rewarding film to watch. Having said that, the committee doesn't always agree on film choices. I think some of the more heated arguments we've had have been along the lines of whether a certain film is good enough or whether it's right for the David Lean. But I would say that that's a healthy process, because if we all liked exactly the same films, then I'm sure it would be a bit harder to ensure that a diverse range of films were screened. One way in which having a community organisation strengthens our programme is the fact that we have people prepared to go the extra mile and make use of or establish contacts in order to enhance our programmes by having Q&As, introductions, discussions, special guests offering their expertise. Although we don't have a defined frequency in terms of those, it does seem to happen approximately once a month, and I think a particularly memorable occasion during the year that we're showcasing was August last year, when we had a Skype Q&A with Andrew Mudge, director of the Forgotten Kingdom, and that was almost miraculous, seeing the director appearing on the screen from the USA and answering questions from the audience. But of course, we've had directors and other guests sitting with us in the cinema too. It's now appropriate to say something in terms of how successful these and other films have been. Ticket sales in the campaign's second year were 33% higher than the first year. 8,352 tickets sold compared to 6,293, but with significant increases in the number of screenings each month from January 2015 onwards, 31% more seats were offered for sale in the year up to 31st of March this year compared to the previous year. That's 11,926 seats offered compared to 9,112. Thus, a slightly higher percentage of seats were sold in 2015-16, 70% compared to 69% the previous year. During the year, good and not so good records were set in the following ways. The lowest percentage of seats sold was 49% in July 2015. The highest percentage of seats sold was an astonishing 94% in January 2016. I think partly because we were adding screenings to meet the demand in certain cases. The highest sales in any month were 1,086 tickets sold in March 2016. Our most successful film has been in the year under review, which was Suffragette, with a remarkable 8 sellouts. The only other film which has exceeded 4 screenings was also in the year in question, which was The Lady in the Van, which I believe was shown 6 times. Regular patrons will have noticed that there was a steady deterioration in conditions at the box office over the year, with increasing difficulties with regard to getting a good enough signal for the box office laptop to connect to our online sales platform, together with difficulties getting the printer to communicate and print out, and even power supply issues. But we're pleased to report that these issues have been largely solved in the current year. Over the year, the campaign's internet presence was steadily enhanced, adding guidance on booking tickets and accessing the cinema to the main David Lean page on TicketSource, adding links to trailers, reviews, and other interesting articles, although our box office manager, Alan, remarked that he was unsure if people were reading these. He's not actually here tonight, but if you are reading these, please tell him, because he'd be very pleased to know that his efforts in that respect are helping patrons. And of course, since the year under review, we have launched our website, but I'll mention that a bit later in terms of things beyond the 2015-16 year. I'll also touch upon certain other aspects of our publicity, because a lot of time spent on campaign work does go into publicity, because it remains quite surprising how often people say, I had no idea that films were being shown in the David Lean, so obviously we need to try and spread the word. People sometimes even say, I've heard the cinema may be closing, which means we can give them the good news that they completely missed the period where it was closed and they can just enjoy the period when it's open. We have, I think, a good social media presence. We have well over 800 followers on Twitter. We're nearly up to 900 on Facebook. And whilst we know not everyone is a fan of these, they certainly help us to spread the word to people that aren't engaging with us in other ways. Although I think our mailing list is about 1,700 now, which, of course, is a sizable number. Not everyone reads those messages, but through the fact that we're using MailChimp nowadays, we do see that we regularly have 40% of patrons opening those messages, which may not sound enormous, but we see figures indicating that the industry average is something like 16%. So clearly, people do find cinema campaign communications a bit more interesting than the average ones. And of course, we publicise ourselves in other ways. We have press releases now and again when notable things happen. We have brochures, which nearly 5,000 of those are printed. We also have our posters, and I'll thank Nigel Tyndale, who I can see is in the audience, who helps us prepare those posters. Our number of screenings is broadly the same as the number we established in January last year. So it tends to be 9 screenings a year. As you probably know, the emphasis is on Thursdays with daytime and evening screenings, but also Tuesday evenings and occasional Saturdays. However, people sometimes wonder if our longer-term objective in terms of a fully open cinema is still the goal, and I can confirm that certainly that's what we hope to do, but with a structure so reliant on volunteers, it is very difficult to substantially expand. I should say that around the end of last year, we did have quite an encouraging meeting with the Council's Cabinet Minister for Culture, where he did make some reference to plans to expand the Clock Tower's arts offerings during a period when the Fairfield was closed, and potentially help us to get the cinema possibly even up to a fully open state. But I have to say that has gone rather quiet, and we had a subsequent meeting with Croydon Cultural Director Paula Murray a few months ago, where she wasn't really holding out any hope of that sort of support being forthcoming in the near future. Another important area of our activity is maintaining equipment relating to the cinema and working with our council contacts to make sure that everything is working. During the year in question, the council replaced 2 surround sound speakers because they were distorting. They replaced 2 projection box monitor speakers. Our sound man, Roger, repaired an amplifier in the projection box that was producing the sound in the box, so that was done at no cost to the council. However, the council did generously spend about £5,000 renewing the infrared system for hearing impaired patrons, and that has proved to be a major success, with patrons saying it certainly has enhanced the sound for them. We also relaunched 35mm screenings for the first time in many years with our screenings of David Lean's Summer Madness last summer. And the David Lean is now the only cinema, I think probably nearer than Brixton, equipped to show films in 35mm. And I think there is evidence of a revival in terms of interest in film. I feel it could become the new vinyl. And so it's good that the David Lean is well positioned to hopefully take advantage of that and still show the occasional film on 35mm. The curtains have worked sporadically. I think perhaps we've learnt why the council gave up trying to keep them working years ago. But the motors have been replaced, and we will persist with this. If you want to see them working, come to a film directed by David Lean, because we always seem to get them working in times for those prestige occasions. Problems with the heating did resurface a little in the winter, but I think that is broadly under control now. Looking beyond the clock tower, the most notable thing I think can be mentioned, which I would like to thank our current councillors for, is the fact that in December last year, the banners outside the clock tower were brought back, and one of those actually says the David Lean Cinema, which in the old days it only said cinema, so that was a nice step forward. And also, that meant that we had the opportunity to say that the name of the cinema had officially become the David Lean Cinema again, because although the council didn't make any such announcement, as they had put a sign outside saying David Lean Cinema, I think that was a reasonable presumption. And that has been followed more recently by the restoration of the sign above the cinema doors, which quite recently, for the first time since 2011, actually says the David Lean Cinema. Our volunteer coordinators, Heather and Kathy, asked that I express the committee's thanks in relation to volunteers for their continued support. I think we now have over 50 beyond the volunteering also undertaken by committee members, and we certainly could not run the cinema without them. So sincere thanks to all the volunteers who helped make the David Lean Cinema viable. The volunteer coordinator's role involves recruiting, selecting, training of stewards and box office volunteers, and referring those interested in projection to our chief technician. They prepare and distribute the monthly rota, arrange emergency cover as necessary, and ensure all volunteers are indicated on safety procedures and do other tasks as crop up. Please ask Heather or Kathy if you would like more details. They share these tasks and are looking for a third person to shadow the role, and would be happy to discuss this work with anyone interested in doing this. And I think I should add that although we currently have a full complement for the committee, there's no certainty that that will be the case from our committee AGM next September. So bearing in mind that some of the committee won't just have served an official term of 2 years by then, but will have been on committee ever since the summer of 2011, it would be nice to have some new blood coming through, because we fully acknowledge that people wouldn't necessarily want to go into quite responsible committee roles without any preparation. So I would like to appeal to you, if there is anyone who would like to consider getting actively involved in the work of the committee, please let us know either quite soon or certainly well in advance of the next AGM, because there would be scope to get any such persons involved in tasks that would then ease them into committee roles in advance of possibly being elected this time next year. Well, that pretty much wraps up what I'd like to say about the year in question, but I will touch upon a few key things from the period April onwards. On a somewhat depressing note, as you'll have seen, the Arts Bar closed quite suddenly. We knew there was a question mark about its continuation, but when the former council contract with Interserve ended, that resulted in us being asked to come up with £45 for every screening that the bar would be open, which simply isn't affordable. But we have put forward proposals that we hope might offer a way to go forward, either temporarily or permanently, possibly with some volunteer involvement behind the Arts Bar. On a more positive note, as many of you will know, we have the website up and running. I think that's been publicised since August. And of course, that has largely taken over from TicketSource in terms of being the fundamental point of contact, where you can see exactly what's coming up and then head into TicketSource just to finalise the booking. So many thanks to Roger Dowling and Alan Peacle for their work on that, because it is something that we've been trying to move forward with for a very long time. Finally, I would like to say I think a major highlight, which is imminent, is the completion of the seats project, which rectifies some sad things that happened in 2013 where certain front row seats were thrown away. At 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, representatives from the company Cohen & Simpson, who specialise in cinema and seating, cinema and theatre seating, will be arriving to put two new pairs of seats in the front row, put back a pair that was lacking armrests, and also do a bit of recovering and replacing of armrests that were in a pretty poor state. So this is a great step forward, because it means we finally got the auditorium back to the way it should look, with the right sort of seats, the level of comfort that existed up to 2011. And of course, next Tuesday we have this very special screening where we're showing David Lean's The Passionate Friends in 35mm. We have the Mayor of Croydon will be saying a few words, as will representatives from the David Lean Foundation. And we are extremely grateful to the David Lean Foundation for offering us slightly over £3,000 to cover this work. And so they have proved to be very good friends to the campaign, considering that they mainly focus on organisations such as the BFI, BAFTA and the National Film and TV School in Beaconsfield, with a view to cultivating the David Leans of the future. I think it is very good of them that they do value what we're doing here as well. I'll just end by thanking Shelley Williams, William Antoniani and Chris Quinn, who have been our primary contacts in terms of council staff. Chris Quinn has now retired, but until recently he was providing good support. So many thanks to them both for making it possible for us to hold this meeting in these elegant surroundings, but also in terms of their support for the David Lean, because without their help there are a lot of things that wouldn't get fixed, and we just wouldn't have the cooperation that makes screening films reasonably manageable. So that concludes my report. There will be plenty of time later to raise points and ask your own questions, but if you would like to seek clarification on anything I've said at this point, then you're very welcome to do so. Looks like you broadly understood that. So thanks for listening, and I will now hand over to Margaret.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about the accounts. I'm the treasurer, and the pack that you've got, you should have some pages with numbers on. That's the accounts. So, like Adrian, I'm talking about the year that finished last March, the end of March, not the current year that we're in. And On the front page, you've got the agenda, then you've got some changes to the Constitution on page 2, and on the third page, you've got the list, the information about the CIC, with the names of the directors and so on. And then the following page, you've got the first of the pages with the profit and loss account. I propose just really vague to talk through it to, so that everybody can see what it is we've, how much money we've made, how much money we've spent, and a little bit about the comparison with the previous year. So you can see that our turnover was £55,000. That compares with £51,000 the previous year. So, as Adrian said, it's gone up. And we have some charges for the cost of the sale, cost of the films, cost of sales, which is the money that we pay to the film distributors and so on, and then the gross profit of £28,000. That gives us, once you've taken off the administrative expenses, a profit before taxation of £7,500, profit tax to be paid, and the profit for the period of £6,000 just over. Last year, the profit was considerably higher, and we paid more tax. So this year, we've had more administrative expenses. Notably, we've been paying some staff, and that has brought the profit down, which also means that the tax has come down. The next page, on the opposite side, has got the balance sheet as it is of now and the amount of money that was in the account at the 31st of March of £21,000. Which is not very different from what it was last year. I haven't got that number in front of me, but it's not very different at all. We decided this year to pay staff because we had got that sort of money. You need a sort of a cushion of money to enable you to have the confidence to take on staff because, you know, something bad might happen to the cinema or something, and you've got to pay people for their period of notice, so you need to have a certain amount of money to be able to have that confidence. So that we also needed money for bonds. Some film distributors require a bond to be paid before they'll release a film to us, so we were looking to have a certain amount of money in the bank for that. The next page, the one which has got number 5 at the bottom, includes the following one are just notes that go with the financial statements. Page 5 has got the depreciation of the computer, the payment of one of the staff, and the tax, which is due. Page 6 is another summary. And the last page again refers to the amount, the balance, which we are holding at the moment. Oh, there's the balance for last year, 15,000, and this year it's 21,000. The accounts were prepared by Cruisenberg, a Croydon film firm. And I'm very happy to answer any questions if anyone has any about the accounts. We have a roving mic, so you don't even need to shout. We can. Anyone have any questions? A question at the back?
What was your accountancy fee?
What was the accountancy fee? Yeah. I'd have to look it up.
Okay.
About 500, I think.
Okay. Thank you.
Cruisenberg also do the calculations on the salaries and the tax and so on for us, since I'm not an expert in those fields. Any other questions? Could I then invite the members of the audience to take note of the accounts? They've been approved by the directors, but we would like the AGM to take note of them. Could I have a proposer? perhaps. Yes, gentleman here. John's taking notes. And seconder from Margaret, yeah. Thank you. Do you want to take a vote? No. Are the accounts agreed? Yep. Anyone opposed? Thank you.
Good evening. My name is John Ingman, and I'm secretary to the committee. And I've got two jobs tonight. And the first job is to ask you to agree the three appointments to the committee on the agenda under item 4. Now, all these people, the three people, were elected for just a year last year, whilst the rest of the committee was elected for 2 years. It wasn't because we'd got anything against them. It was just to avoid a situation whereby everybody was going to stand down at the same time. So we appointed these people just for a year. Now, two of them, Roger Dowling and Alex Tyler, now wish to stay on for 2 years more, whilst Kathy Burns wishes to stay on for just a year. Now, all of them have worked very hard for the campaign. Roger Dowling, the guy who just adjusted the microphone for me, has been a source of technical knowledge and expertise. And in particular, he's managed the development and installation of our website, which has been a huge undertaking. Alex Tyler has contributed artwork of various kinds and has developed links with young people like her. We're particularly grateful for her because she brings down the average age of the committee. Kathy Burns is joint volunteer coordinator, and what would we do without our volunteer coordinators? She and Heather have worked very hard to ensure that volunteers are available and that they are trained properly. We are grateful, therefore, to all three of them and commend them to you. Now, as Adrian has indicated, we are keen to encourage new people on the committee, and one of our aims in the coming year is to attract new committee members. And we shall be very glad to hear from anyone who would like to work with us with a view to joining the committee. But in the meantime, could I have a proposer and seconder for these three appointments? Thank you. And thank you very much. And are those appointments agreed? Right, thank you very much. Right. Now we come to changes to the constitution. We adopted a constitution last year, and here we are wanting to change it already. The only way we can change it is for the AGM to agree. So that's why we've had to bring these quite small changes to you to agree tonight. And they're set out in more detail on the back of your agendas. So you might like to turn now to the back of the agenda, and then that'll accompany what I'm saying. There are two things we'd like to do tonight. First of all, we'd like to provide that an externally professionally qualified examiner should be appointed at the AGM instead of an auditor. Our current constitution provides that we should have an audit, but we don't actually need to have our accounts audited, and it is sufficient that an external examiner is appointed, and if you agree to this change, our treasurer, Margaret Sayudek, will propose this shortly. So that's the change there, to have an external examiner instead of an auditor, because we don't need an auditor. And then secondly, we need to amend the provisions for giving notice of our meetings. At present, the Constitution provides that we have to send details to any postal addresses we hold, as well as by email. And this has become difficult and expensive, because the only list of postal addresses which we have is old and unreliable. And so we think it would be better if we simply sent information by post to people who specifically asked to have the information sent by post. So that's all that change is intended to achieve. that in future we would only send information by post to people who specifically asked to have the information sent by post. Most people these days have the information sent by email. So that's what this change is intended to achieve. Are there any questions about what we're proposing to do? Yes.
What is the difference between an external examiner and an auditor?
An external examiner need not be a qualified auditor. An external examiner can, as in this case, be someone working in an accountant's firm who provides scrutiny, who scrutinises rather than audits the books. That's the difference. It's just that it's not a formal audit with all that that implies. But it is a scrutiny. We're not going to be allowed to get away with anything.
Thank you.
Right.
Can I add that if I did the accounts, then you would want an auditor. But because somebody else prepares the accounts who works for an auditing firm and are themselves outsiders and therefore external examiners, professional examiners, then you don't need both. You don't need an accountant firm and then for them to go to another person to check their own work, as it were. It's removing a layer, which is costly, of course. Every layer costs money.
Any more questions? Right, thank you very much. In that case, could I have a proposer and a seconder for both these changes to the Constitution? Thank you. Are those changes in the Constitution agreed? Right, thank you very much indeed. Could I, what we want to do now, having just agreed that all we need to have is a professionally qualified, an external professionally qualified examiner, is that we'd like to appoint Cruz and Burke to that position because we have used them for the last 18 months, isn't it? And they have been satisfactory in every respect, and we've been very grateful to them for all the work they've done, not least on sorting out pay, because that's a real minefield. And they have scrutinised our accounts carefully, and we have every confidence in them. So we'd like to recommend them to you. May I assume that that is agreed? Yes. Right, thank you very much. Thank you. That's finally.
Well, of course, one thing that makes us different to a conventional cinema is that we're a community interest company, and that means that we are constitutionally obligated to serve the community, and as we're clearly not doing this to try and make money, other than cover our running costs, serving the community in ways that is satisfying for the community is the way that hopefully we gain satisfaction from this whole enterprise. So we have made sure there's plenty of time in tonight's programme for what we're calling listening to our audience. So this is where you have the chance to be absolutely frank with any point you want to raise about the David Lean cinema. You can tell us why you didn't like a certain film. You could complain that we haven't shown what you think we should be showing, or you could cover totally different matters about where you think the campaign should be heading or what you think we're doing right or wrong. So please feel free to raise a hand and our roving mic will give you the opportunity to ask whatever you like.
Now the Fairfield Hall have closed, will that make a difference to the David Lean cinema?
Did everyone hear that? Because I think you did. I think it's bound to make some difference because there was quite a significant amount of overlap in terms of the films we were showing, although the Fairfield tended to show them later. I hope it will give us the opportunity to bring in family audiences a bit more because they were showing quite a few films aimed at young audiences and, to be honest, for an extremely low ticket price. So I think we should view the closure of the Fairfield as an opportunity, because obviously the audience isn't going to be satisfied through that venue, and so I hope that we can capitalise upon that to some extent. There was some scope raised to potentially have other organisations utilising the Fairfield's website, while they didn't have anything of their own to promote, and so I hope that's something we might be able to look into. I've just been reminded that one interesting way in which we have interacted with the Fairfield is by making it known to their substantial group of volunteers that opportunities exist at the David Lean. And I believe something like 18 came forward, and that most of those are actually going to, well, I know one or two has started, but you will be seeing quite a few new faces as stewards who were previously volunteering at the Fairfield. And so I think that is a very positive way in which we have added to our volunteer team and hopefully provided outlets for their volunteers who wanted to keep doing something in that line.
I know at certain times of year we've had films that have been, for example, in the autumn, we've had something suitable for Halloween. I just wonder if any thought had been given to various months of sessions where, for example, perhaps once a month it could be a film of a particular director, or a month of Westerns, or, I hate to say this to you, Philip, but James Bond. I know your feeling on James Bond, but that type of thing, so a particular type of film.
The problem is that with a season, that we only show two films a week, and even in the quietest month a year, doing a season would mean ditching quite a few new releases. I think if we get to the point where we can show three different films in a week, perhaps if we're able to do additional screenings, then that would be more of a possibility, to be honest. Very much value that we show new films, and there are times of year where you think we've shown nine films, and if we dropped a couple of them, nobody would have minded too much, but if we dropped four of them, it would really be pushing it. There are other times of year where if we had three screens a week, there are easily 13 films we could show, but there are certainly other times of year where there aren't, and so with three a week, a season would be a very natural thing to do. You then get into the problems of can we go up to three films a week? Do we have the volunteer base? What would we do if we hit the VAT limit, which I know is a subject dear to Margaret's heart, and we haven't felt confident in making that leap yet is the short answer on that. As well as Halloween, we do support Black History Month, LGBT Month, International Women's Day, Holocaust Memorial Day. So those are ways in which we can mark those events with at least one film. In the case of LGBT month in February, there was a very strong slate of films with LGBT themes. So we're able to show several that fitted in with that. Mavis, which we're showing in October, actually came out in the spring, but I held it back because I felt it was... we had a lot of films on then. It was that time of year when there's a lot of really, really strong titles. But I held on to it so that we could show it in Black History Month next month, as it was so suitable. So that's a kind of halfway house. I know it's not entirely what you're looking for.
Hi, yeah, I'm just wondering, it's just an idea, whether or not you've considered having any sort of discount on ticket sales for like NHS staff or people working for the local government, council, that sort of thing.
Yes, we hadn't thought specifically about that. We do have two prices. We have a discounted rate, but for students and the retired. You know, I'm the treasurer. I like to keep the money coming in. But... certainly we could do it for certain films if it was a relevant film.
Initial yeah. idea, you know, and I guess it needs to be thought a bit more.
It would need to be thought through, yes.
But just wondering whether it might increase ticket sales for some showings.
Well, we do try to show films meeting specific audiences. I mean, Philip's just talked about the Black History Month and so on, but we also show films. We're trialling the Babes in Arms films, relaxed performances, I suppose you would call them, in other contexts. But we charge the same price for that.
Yes.
Is there any chance of showing another double bill as you did last year with the Horror Nights? I mean, just a double bill of any films, not necessarily a horror double bill. But having the opportunity to see two films on the same night, possibly sort of discounted if you see two at the same time.
It's not come up. We think it just about worked last year. We did turn over the audience quite a bit between the two horror films, and they were quite different styles. I suppose it could be an occasion where we had two films that were both relatively short, and we would want to be operating the bar in a manner that we were comfortable with before we try that again. It's tricky. I mean, if we showed a film and its sequel, we have to go back to the people who licensed the old films, and they are not easy or cheap characters to deal with. What I'd suggest, I'm trying to think of examples on the fly, and I'm not doing very well here, is I'd suggest do get in touch with me. David's got an idea, has he? Right, all right. Here's David Lavelli.
One film we have been considering that came out recently is the Ingrid Bergman documentary. And the idea was to perhaps show a film, perhaps Hitchcock's Notorious, with that. So that's something we're thinking about. Of course, it depends on the length of both of those, but if they could fit into a double bill, that might be something to consider.
Let's have a bit of audience interaction. Let's have an impromptu poll. Let's suppose that in November we do show the acclaimed documentary, and very much enjoyed by Mr. Secretary, I believe.
Well, up to a point.
He thinks everything's too long. This meeting's already too long, isn't it, John? Supposing we were to program the documentary Ingrid Bergman in her own words, which Mr. Secretary says is good to a point, and the Hitchcock thriller Notorious starring Ingrid Bergman. So we could either potentially do that as a double bill, or we could show them on different days. So let's have a show of hands if you would prefer that to appear as a double bill, or if you would prefer different days. Oh, dear. But it's rather close, that's the thing. Oh, dear, that hasn't helped. Ah, John points out it's too long anyway. Okay.
It's nearly 2 hours.
Okay, so what I've concluded from this is in an analogous example, there's about a 50-50 split in our core audience between those who would prefer a double bill and those who prefer separate days.
No, I was just going to say, if you had one in the afternoon, give us time to go home, have our tea, and then come back in the evening.
Well, there is something that we're trying. You may have noticed on the October listings, there is something that we're trying out, and it relies on the good graces of all our volunteers for an extra screening. But in the third week, we show Café Society on a Tuesday afternoon and a Thursday evening, and Little Men on a Tuesday evening, and actually it's the Thursday morning screening. So we're flipping the films so that there are the two films, but you get the opportunity to see them on both different days. So let's try that. Let's try. If we had two associated films on the same... say we had the Ingrid Bergman doc and the Hitchcock. Would you like us to show them on the same day, or one on the Tuesday and one on the Thursday? So, same day? One on Tuesday, one on Thursday. Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you.
In conjunction with showing films at the Fairfield Halls, they were also doing live screenings. Is this something that we could adopt, as there doesn't now seem to be anything happening in it?
I'm pleased you've raised that, because the David Lean Cinema were actually pioneers in terms of live screening and did present this in their last year. And they had terms where if they'd been able to continue into a second year, their revenue from live streaming would have shot up enormously, and it might have considerably helped to balance the books. And so the David Lean does have some related equipment. Now, of course, things may have moved on somewhat since then, and in terms of an actual live streaming as opposed to a pre-recorded one that has happened at an earlier stage, which are also commonly shown in cinemas, we would need to check that everything is working, particularly with that not happening at the Fairfield. I think it might be nice to see a show of hands if you would like to see us moving into that sort of area, if we are technically able to do so. That does seem to be a considerable number, which is worth taking on board. Of course, when it comes to live streaming, ticket prices would be higher, because I know that, for example, quite close to the end of the former era, they were having things like Frankenstein from the National Theatre, and one of the former staff told me they could have sold that out six times over, and the ticket price was then £15, which I'm not sure if that would necessarily be the going rate locally. Would those who put their hands up also be happy to pay a significantly higher price? Because I'm sure that from our point of view, it costs us more to do that than to show a conventional film. Well, I guess that's a pretty convincing endorsement, so we can perhaps at least find out where we stand in terms of whether we can get the equipment working.
Can I point out that we have only 68 seats? And if it's a genuine live event, of course, there isn't the opportunity to run it more than once. And there is the question of whether that limited number of seats that are available would cover the costs.
Well, the fact that the David Lean started doing this in 2010, and I know their contract meant that their revenue was only 25% of what it would have gone up to if the cinema hadn't been closed the following year. And so they thought it was worthwhile then. So I think it's at least worth us looking into it further.
Oh, yes. Very good. One has got to remember that The View at Purley Way does have live transmissions, so you might be clashing. I know it's a different audience, but just to tell you that.
Well, we do have quite a few patrons who definitely love to see things at the David Lean rather than other cinemas, partly because of the friendly atmosphere and the lack of crunching and talking in the audience and looking at phones. So I think that has been a good selling point for the David Lean. Any other points or questions?
Early on, you referred to there being a VAT limit on something. Can you elaborate on that? And is that something that could at some point constrain the growth of activities? Is that something that the AGM should have a view on?
Once your turnover is somewhere around 85,000 a year, you have to start paying VAT, and we're at 55,000 at the moment. VAT adds a whole level of complication, which maybe by then I'll have retired from the committee and there'll be a new treasurer who can deal with it. But, it's also complicated by we'd have to probably put up the ticket prices to cover the 20% to cover the cost. Who would pay 20% more so that we could pay VAT?
Hi, I just wanted to just ask generally, I know I only ever come in the evenings, but I just wondered how the sales compare between the afternoon showings and the evening ones, and also roughly as a percentage, what proportion of concessions, what proportion of full price? Just interested to find out.
I'll have a go at this. If our box office manager, Alan, who is known as Lord Doom for his careful scrutiny of sales figures, were here, then he could make a better fist of it. I think our average sales per screening are quite similar between the afternoon and the evening. Of course, we have almost twice as many evening screenings, well, twice as many in typical week, but then in the most popular months, we tend to have some extra afternoon screenings. The audience mix is rather different. There are some occasions when the cinema can be pretty full in the afternoon and almost every sale is a concession. The evening is more of a split. And obviously we're very pleased to welcome everybody in our audience. From a financial perspective, of course, we charge 20% less to our concessions. So that does make something of a difference in terms of the amount we take in. But we're not here to make a profit, so that's fine, essentially. it just does slightly change the viability calculations for each film. So we look at that a little bit. Yes, the crossover point where a film covers its costs can vary slightly because when you hire a film from a distributor, there's a minimum guarantee that they want, so you have to pay them at least £100 or at least £120, even if three people turn up. But if it will usually say 35%, so if 35% of the takings equals more than the minimum guarantee, then you pay them that instead. So if you've taken £500, then you have to pay them £175, not £100. So that's kind of how it works. And if a film is all concessions, it gets harder to creep across the minimum guarantee. But that's, as I said, that's our business model, as it were. We're here to serve the audience we have, which contains a high proportion of concessions, and we do our sums accordingly.
I think in terms of the proportion, I can add that in the old days, about 60% of tickets sold were concessions, and I'm pretty sure that if Alan was here, he would say that it's at least at that sort of level now. So it's definitely well over half. And although obviously we welcome all categories of audience, it would be nice to attract more non-concessions as well. And so we do find that certain films, I think something like The Hateful Eight, for example, does have a relatively high number that aren't concessions, but I think there is something of an ongoing challenge giving the David Lean the sort of image that maybe a cinema like the Ritzy would have in terms of bringing in that sort of audience that would perhaps swell the numbers of people in their 30s and 40s perhaps to capitalise more on that sort of audience.
It's one of those things, probably if we ever did expand, then we would hope that we would keep the audience, if we were able to show more films, we'd hope to keep the audience that we have and perhaps also, add some audiences who, say, look like me or even look like Alex, who's 25, who isn't here tonight, and that would be a natural thing to do to keep the folks we have and to add a more varied demographic group. But it's an interesting challenge getting folks of my age and Alex's age to come to a cinema to see films which tend to be a few weeks after release, which is the way we have to do it as a small cinema. I don't much mind when films come out, whereas when I see them, but a lot of people either want to see them first or they'll go to the live, they'll watch them at home with the ever-shortening time between cinema release and being able to watch them at home now. So it's an interesting topic, which I could ramble on about for hours, but I shall not.
If you're trying to attract an audience 30s to 40s age group, is the time that the films actually start a bit early? Because if people are coming back from work in London, it'd be very difficult to get back by 7:30.
I know all about the trains. The thing is that we need to be out of the building by 10 on a regular basis. It is an interesting question, though, whether people who do already come to the cinema would be happy if we were say half an hour later, or if you prefer it the way it is. I don't know if there are any particular views on whether we're in our evening screenings are, you know, too early, too late, about right at present, folks? If you think our screenings are too early and you would like them to be later in the evening, then put your hand up, please. Ah. If you think that they are currently too late and you would like them to be earlier, please put your hand up, please. Okay, well, everyone likes the way we're doing it. There is always the selection problem here, the selection bias problem, in that the people who don't like the way we do things are probably not here. so it's always something to be aware of, but okay, I'm not getting a strong push for a change on this one, but thank you for asking.
Adrian, you touched on the thorny problem of the council in terms of their support of the David Lean, of the cinema itself. I mean, all of the plans and everything that we've got are totally reliant upon the fact that the council sort of still agrees that we can use the cinema. So what is the latest sort of feeling as to their attitude towards us?
Well, as you say, this is quite a delicate issue because we have to have a good relationship with the council, and people often think relations are with councillors, when the reality is that even when we were preparing for our launch prior to that happening in March 2014, even at that time, there was virtually no contact with councillors, and everything was happening with staff who may or may not have been at times briefed by councillors in terms of what they were able to do. But certainly it is extremely important for us to cultivate friendly relations with staff, because the fact that some staff are very keen to see the Clock Tower somewhat revitalized in terms of the arts genuinely makes things a lot easier, because, I mean, for example, at the AGM last year, staff helped us out by taking two of the lamps out of all those chandeliers that at that time were impossible to switch off. So that just goes to show that cultivating those friendly relationships are very important, and that's what really matters on the day-to-day basis. In terms of matters that are more touching upon council policy, one thing that we do have very good reason to be grateful for is the fact that we're able to use the cinema for a very modest price, which is far less than an organisation would be charged for a more commercial booking. So basically, we pay £30 per film, irrespective of the length of the film. So that is a modest charge, which helps make it manageable. People sometimes ask, why don't you stop using the word save the David Lean cinema, which is a good question that also touches upon this issue. We continue to use that word partly because it saves having to formally change our name and get into issues that would be perhaps a bit more formidable now that we're a community interest company, but also because, at least personally, I would argue that the cinema isn't saved in terms of having an extremely secure, longer-term future. In reality, the quite informal agreement that exists with the council could be terminated at 3 months' notice. So, although I'm definitely not predicting it's going to happen, that does mean that it's difficult to plan ahead in terms of how things might progress in the much longer term. So, I think the council value the fact that we have brought back a part of the council's arts offering at the Clock Tower, albeit it's significantly less than three or so screenings every day, but it's obviously far better than nothing. And I think the council also appreciate that this is happening at no cost whatsoever to the council. I feel that it would be nice if we did get a bit more support in terms of some sort of subsidy that would enable us to expand screenings in the sort of way that was touched upon when we had our meeting with the Cabinet Minister late last year. And, for example, one of our current key issues is that of the Arts Bar being closed. And so I think it would be a nice gesture if we don't manage to move forward in the current negotiations, if the council were perhaps to say they would put a bit of subsidy into helping us to keep the Arts Bar open. Because perhaps one thing I can ask the audience here is if you do feel that that is quite a significant loss, both in terms of the facilities that you'd like to make use of yourself, but also the stature of the David Lean as a credible arts venue where you might expect certain facilities like that to be open. And so perhaps you could raise a hand if you do feel it is quite a significant loss, which isn't going to be helpful to our future unless something can be done in the reasonable near future. Well, that is very useful to know that you feel that way, partly because that is something that we can feed into any future communication we have with the relevant council staff or possibly even councillors, to say that it's clearly the feeling of the campaign's patrons that we need to bring that service back. I think this better be the last question.
How would you describe the relationship between David Lean and young people? For example, my grandson has never come to David Lean. I can't imagine him coming. This sort of half-term market when kids sort of pile in with buckets of junk food and the rest. It's like a horror story. But no, how would you describe the relationship between young people and David Lean, and how would you like to see it go?
Well, when you say young people, are you referring to quite a broad age range or something a bit more specific?
11-year-olds upwards, say 11 to 15.
Well, I think it is worth saying that that we have persisted with films aimed at younger audiences, although with some of them, like the Studio Ghibli films, they are really films for all ages. And although I can't say we're seeing hordes of young people streaming into the cinema, I think we definitely have seen numbers that are greater than when we started doing that. And so there has been that sense that there is at least a significant number of children. It might be 10 or 12 or something like that. And so I sincerely hope that does continue. I haven't heard of any examples of children being distressed because they can't get a huge vat of popcorn. So hopefully we're able to attract children that don't consider that the main priority. This is also something that we can ask our supporters to help with, because you may know families with younger children who perhaps may not feel it's generally feasible to take them to a film at the David Lean. But if you tell them that we've got Swallows and Amazons coming up in a half term in October, then that might be the ideal opportunity. And certainly someone I know actually came from Kingston or somewhere like that with their young children, and they thought that the cinema had a distinctive charm and they'd like to see the projection box and so on. So even though we're not necessarily providing what they would get in a multiplex, hopefully we are offering something a bit different and distinctive.
Just to mention that the campaign is not the only organisation using the cinema. And in fact, quite a lot of young people do get into that auditorium, largely to see their own work. There are quite a few youth arts project type organisations who use the cinema to screen their own productions.
I'm very pleased that Stephen Furley, who in fact is our chief projectionist, has touched upon that, because I think it would perhaps be a bit remiss to not mention that if we view the David Lean, at least to some extent, as a recent success story, its success shouldn't simply be measured in terms of our screenings, because there are increasingly larger numbers of Bollywood films from Apsara Arts and other organisations using the cinema, sometimes for public screening, something that isn't for the general public. But it does go to show that that certainly, following on from us getting it open, it is a resource that is being used more by other people in the community. And I think eventually we would like us to see a situation, in fact, one way that the council could possibly help is to help us move into a situation where there are things like a box office service that covers everything that's happening at the David Lean that is open to public audiences. That could include the campaign stream and streams from other people that could be clearly defined as coming from different groups. But if everything was available through a centralized box office, then that would just help to make it a venue with greater clarity in terms of coming along and seeing things. Well, thank you very much for the points you've raised. That's very useful, and I'm sure that will result in further consideration of some of those points by the committee. I would now like to thank you for coming along to our meeting. I don't think the numbers are significantly lower than last year, which is great to see, because, of course, our first AGM had a certain novelty value that wasn't going to be repeated, but the fact that you're back is much appreciated. Don't rush off unless you have to, because we are going to conclude the evening with a screening of the 51-minute documentary Hollywood, The Dream Factory, about MGM Studios. And I should particularly thank our friends at the Cinema Museum who have provided the 16mm print that we are going to be screening. So we will now take a break for a few minutes. If you would like a cup of tea or coffee or whatever, that is going to be available at the bar free of charge. And of course, the box office will be open. So don't forget that there are some tickets left for our very special celebratory evening, where you can be amongst the first people to see and perhaps even briefly slip into one of those brand new seats on Tuesday. So it would be great to have a full house there, partly because it's going to be a great memorable evening, but also it will help express a very strong message to the David Lean Foundation that this is a thriving organization that they may wish to help us with in future, and take the remainder of the seats, which are going to be looking a little bit tatty compared to the new ones. Gradually, we may receive future grants that before too long enables us to present a quite new looking auditorium. So thanks again for coming. Please stay if you can, and we'll now take a short break before the film.